Mahomes back, throws, it is incomplete, yes. picked off by the Lions. Brian Branch with it left side, he's gone, baby, he's going to the house! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! Deflected, yes. In the air, Branch ran under it, and he took it all the way back!
Welcome to the 20 in the Huddle podcast, and this is the pre-draft edition of the podcast, and I am very happy to welcome a guy who knows all about the draft, both from a player and a coach, which is why I'm excited. Kelvin Shepherd, a linebackers coach here, 2011 third round pick of the Buffalo Bills, excuse me. Let's start with this. How was the offseason? A little bit shorter, but you like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I wish it could have been 2 weeks even shorter, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, kind of getting adjusted, this being our first year being in the playoffs, kind of getting this month late start behind other teams, which, like we said, is a good thing. But yeah, it's different than years before.
All right, we're coming up to draft week now. In 2011, you were coming out of LSU. Yeah. What was that week like? Was it nervous? Was it tense? Were you getting last second calls? Did you not know what was going on? Just maybe take me back to that draft week in 2011.
Well, that year in general, I don't know if you remember, Tim, but that year in general was unique because that was actually the lockout year. So that whole thing in general was different because I knew no matter where I got drafted, like, I wasn't going to the team. Yeah. So in that standpoint, obviously, that's more unique than any other year in the drafts. But from a nerve standpoint, absolutely. Because early on, you obviously got the hype train, everybody telling you going first round, you're this, you're that, you're second round. And then, like, the closer, I don't know about everybody else, but it seemed for me, the closer I got to the draft, the lower they started to tell me I was going. So I'm like, I don't like this, dude. Like, I like where I was after my last game. But you know, that's neither here nor, like, that's he say, she say. I even give advice to guys. And I wish I could have known this mentally. It truly doesn't matter where you get drafted. Like I really believe that. Like that's just unique on that day. It's all about what you do after you get drafted. And I think that's what messes a lot of guys up in this process is obviously your end goal. When you're growing up as a kid is to get drafted. But I think that's also the downfall to a lot of people because, in my opinion, a lot of times I'm obviously talking about the higher end guys. You see their work ethic slip and things like that because in their mind they made it. They've achieved the ultimate goal of getting drafted. Huh?
You know, to your point, we talked to Brock Wright, last week, and what a great story, right? Undrafted free agent came in, put his head down, worked his butt off, got a $12 million 3-year, restricted offer. And he made the point that I think a third of the league ends up being undrafted free agent guys. And so if you're not one of those guys, it's not the end of the world, right? You still get your opportunity and just come take care of your own business.
Absolutely. Like, if you really look at the lay of the land in the league, I tell people, is majority made up of those guys. Mm-hmm. The blue collar, you kind of say, sort of guys who got to put the hard hat on and make it year in and year out. Everybody gets kind of confluted with these $100 million deals, but that's a 1% of the league. The reality is guys got to go earn a job every year, and that's kind of – like, credit to Brock Wright, he's done that and he's earned that contract.
What were the pre-draft visits like? Do you remember how many you took?
Yep.
And what was it like back then when you went and visited?
I remember two specifically. One being the Buffalo, obviously, because they drafted me. I spent a lot of time with them that year because they were obviously they also were with me at the Senior Bowl. They coached me at the Senior Bowl, and then they brought me up for a top 30. So I'm like, these guys like me. And then the other was Dallas. And I would say Dallas just from the standpoint, you know, you see the figurehead of Jerry Jones and all this from afar. But actually being able to go sit in a room with him and to talk with him, he really has a high football IQ. And you learn that why he's so involved with the game because he's so hands-on. So that was pretty cool. And I just remember being nervous as hell. Like, I'm like... Man, I don't know.
It's Cowboys, right?
And then, like, this could be the deciding factor. You know, you never know what could be. But now this team is bringing me in. I'm one of 30. Obviously, I'm one of their guys. And you just don't want to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, act the wrong way. But like I said, going in hindsight, I'm not sure if you're gonna ask me, but like I would have told myself to be yourself, like, because that's another mistake guys make. You try to put on this image of something that you're not to get drafted, but then when you get drafted and you show them who you really are, and they're turned off, and then you're out the door in a year or two.
Yeah.
So just be yourself.
A couple days before the draft, is it nerves? Is it do you, at that point you've been through the, you know, the shorts Olympics, right? You've been through the visits, you've been through everything else. Is it nerves? Are you excited? Do you just want it to be over, know where you're going, and for that part of it be done? What are those couple days leading up to the draft as a player?
It's for sure the butterflies in the stomach. And like I said, the top 10 guys and things like that, I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about guys like myself who got a grade, told I could go anywhere from round 2 to round 5. Mm-hmm. Well, man, that's a big difference for not only me, but my family.
Yeah.
Like, round 2, all right?
Okay.
Round 5, I got to put the hard hat on, you know? And that's the reality of your mindset going in. And just the uncertainty, what city am I moving to? Like, those are things people don't kind of think about. They just look at these guys as football players, but these guys are uprooting their lives and going to cities where they have no family and things like that. So I'm like, I was all over the place with emotions. I wanted my family to be proud of me.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to go as high as possible personally. I was competing with other guys. I'm going to go higher than you. So it's just a bunch of built up emotions that leads up to that.
You turn that process into a third round draft selection, into a 7-year NFL career. I think, you know, 2015, you were a 100 tackle guy, great career. And then after your playing days, you decide to go into coaching. Is it an interesting perspective now going through this process over the last couple months evaluating these guys and then going through the visits and everything else? Now from the other side of it, knowing your personal experience having done it, how much do you think that helps you having gone through it as a player and now evaluating it on the other side?
I honestly, the biggest thing for me, I think it helps me be able to relate to the player and the player kind of take off the uniform or mask they have on, or because you get, I mean, these guys go through all type of prep with their agents, speech people, they go through prep interviews. And I think what I offer these guys is whether it's a 15-minute meeting or an hour meeting, depending on the time I get with these guys. I think it's kind of a safe space for these guys, because I let them know I've been there, man, and I know it is. This isn't that. I've had people sit in on my interviews. They're like, man, that's unique the way you do those. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, just the way you're able to allow the guys to relax. And I said, like, these guys are going through everything right now.
And that's how you get to know the real guy, right?
Exactly. Chad? Tim, the worst thing, in my opinion, you could do is try to stump a player in these things. I'm all about uplifting these guys because they've gone through enough. Like, I want to see the guy that's going to be sitting in my meeting room. So what's the best way for me to do that?
Yeah.
Kind of, let's pull off all the fake stuff. I tell them, don't yes or no. Talk to me like you talk every day. Talk to me like you're going to talk in my meeting. And I think you get to reveal the true person in that space versus you come in there, sit across from me. Yes, sir. No, sir. Oh, you lied to me 2 questions ago. Come on. Like, because I've had guys do that to me, to be honest. And I don't think the combine process is as rigorous as it used to be. There's a lot more new rules. I told you, I used to go in a train cart for my interviews. These guys go in suites and get off for snacks. So it's a bit different. But like I would say, my combine interviews is a safe space for these players to come in and open up.
How important is that for you too? Because Dan has preached culture here so much. And it's not just finding a guy that could run a fast 40. It's not finding a guy that can make plays. It's also finding a guy that's a culture fit and fits what you guys are building and doing here. And how does that process that you take in peeling off those layers and allowing you to see the guy maybe help find guys that are true culture fits and not just maybe good players on the football field? Because I think there's a difference.
Oh, 100%. Once I see their shoulders drop, you see them relax, I'm like, I got him. I got him. And this is who I'm going to get. because you can see it, you can only fake it for so long. And I tell these guys that you never want to go into something, whether that's a relationship, a job interview, or anything, and be something you're not going to be after you sign that dotted line, because that's the fastest way to get out of that position. So it falls in line with, and I mean, this is coupled with the studies that Brad, Ray, all these scouts do for 2-3 years on these guys. We kind of just go in and seal the deal for Brad, like, yeah, Brad, it's what you said. Or sometimes it's different and he's like, well, how did you get that perspective? And all this stuff is recorded, so he gets to see it from a different perspective as well. Not as, because if Brad Holmes walks into a room with a player, he's going to put on a show,
right?
If little old Kelvin Shepherd walks in a room with a player, I'm gonna get the real guy. Yeah. So it's good to attack these guys from different angles. And Brad, he takes that holistic approach with the draft. And I think that's why we've had so much success with it.
How do you like working for, Dan and Brad in this process? And how do they incorporate you guys as assistant coaches into this process? And just from the outside looking in, Brad seems like a guy that is going to, dot every I, cross every T, yep, and take every evaluation, every person's opinion. Is that a fair assessment? And what do you like about being under Brad and Dan in this process in particular?
Absolutely. The biggest thing I like is it's all objective. It's all, what do you think? I don't want to hear something, you repeating what I said, what Dan said, what AG said. I want to hear how you feel about the playership. And you may be right. That's the thing. A lot of times, like, we had like two guys this year I know in my stack personally where Brad doubled back and he's like, hey, that, like, how'd you get that? And I tell him, he's like, hey, I really appreciate that because that's not what I heard over here. He's like, so that's another perspective. And just to see, and I'm not talking about high pick guys. I'm talking about the lower tier players that's going to have to put on those hard hats. Yeah. And to just see, like, I don't know how anyone else does it. I've been fortunate to only be here so far on my NFL journey with Brad and Dan. And just to see the detail in it and to know I'm not wasting my time, because it's a lot of time that goes into this stuff to feel a part of it. And once it thrives, we all are thriving. It's not just Brad. He won executive of the year, but he's one of the first ones to come in and say, we won that. Yeah. And just to feel a part of a process and to see it kind of thrive and 2-3 years later, see players like Panahi and all this and to hear what we said about him in the draft room, just pretty cool.
Having gone through this as a player and now going through it as a coach, is there anything you change in the process or do you like the setup?
If there's anything that I would change going back as a player,
yeah,
I would say to tell myself to relax and I'm gonna be honest, to be myself, because I was one of those guys. I mean, you go through all these big agencies, CAA, all these people put you through all these courses and things to really train you to be something that you're not. Like, and that's just something in my whole life, like being in the space I'm in now, the skin I'm in now, something I would tell everybody, like, if you do nothing else, be yourself. And if that person accepts you, some people are going to accept you, some not. But at least they know what they're getting. You know what you're getting. And that's probably the biggest thing I would tell myself.
You ever caught yourself lobbying for a guy on this side of it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, Brad and Dan, I tell you that right now.
And what is that? Just a knock on the door? My couple,
in passing, follow. I see him getting coffee. I'm getting my tea. I'm like, hey, Brad, you saw that guy? He'll look good in a Lions uniform. Like, so.
Brad has a really unique process. I know he's kind of changed this, the after the draft process. We talked about Brock Wright and the importance of getting some of these undrafted free agents and how the third of the league is set up there. What is that process like for you guys as assistant coach? I don't want you to give any, house secrets, but can you just take people, maybe the draft's done, Mr. Irrelevant it has been selected, and now what's that process for you right after, in the hours after that draft?
I think the reason we've had so much success is with our undrafted guys is because of the detail that goes into it. We don't view those guys as undrafted guys. We watch these guys the same way we do a top five pick. We take these guys in. Even we bring in some of these guys here is something that's unique on top 30 visits. Like, for the most part, guys use that on quarterbacks, these top high-end picks. But we'll bring in tier 4, tier 5 guys that we deem our later round guys, because we feel like that is where you build your culture. You build the heartbeat of the team.
You build your depth. RD,
yes. And these guys are the guys that's going to be out there laying online on special teams. Like, if you get a nick here and there, understanding you don't want a drop off the cliff from starter to backup. And I think the detail and the urgency that we go about as soon as that last pick is in the seventh round, the urgency of attacking the phone, the scouts here, attacking the agents, and them understanding we don't care where you're from, we don't care where you were drafted, and we do not care how much money you made. And that's some over 3 years I can stand on the table and sell to somebody because I have 3 years of tape to back it up.
100%. It doesn't matter where you come from. If you can play, the NFL will find you. And the Detroit Lions have proven if you're an undrafted guy, you'll play here too.
Absolutely.
I'd be a little bit remiss now that the players are back in the building if I didn't ask you just about the excitement level of this kicking back off again. I know we talked about it right off the top, just the shortness of the offseason. Has this come by quick? It is kind of crazy. The players are already here. I know you guys have been hard in the free agency and the draft process. Now you turn the corner and guys are running around on the field.
Absolutely.
It feels real, don't it, Chad?
Absolutely. And you walk downstairs, down the hallways, and I saw my man Sam LaPorta today, and just give him some dap and hug him, and just the feel. You feel the energy back in the building. And of course, these first 2 weeks is just the acclimation, them downstairs with strength and conditioning. But within passing, just the excitement to know, I think right now to have the majority of our team here for phase one on the first day in the fourth year of a regime, this isn't a first year regime, just shows you the urgency, not only upstairs, but downstairs in the locker room. These guys are ready to get to it.
And with how well last year went, how long that season went, I think there's a new standard.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think you could sense it from the first week, just talking with some players. I know in their media availability too, there's a new standard. There's some fire in those guys from losing that game.
Oh, absolutely. It's like I said, we're not going to dive into like in-house stuff, but the standard always has continued to raise here since the first day I got here. Each year we raise the bar, but now we're at a point where we just won't tolerate or accept certain things. And if you're not about that, there's the doors, 31 other doors you could go walk in, but it won't be here in Detroit.
Free agency had some additions on the defensive side of the ball. I see you're smiling already. Maybe that's because a guy named DJ Reader is here. Yeah. I know your linebackers are probably really happy about that. But Shep, you got that room back. Yeah. And that's a room that really grew last year. Yeah. When you talk about guys like Derek Barnes taking the next step forward, and Alex really really taking that next step. Malcolm accepting his role and being a team guy, it looks like a really terrific room. You've got all those guys back and some additions on defense. You got to be really excited about where that's at, aren't you?
Absolutely. We kind of talked pre-show about I lost my man Nowowski, but he is on a 53-man active roster in Arizona, and I lost my man Pitt. Pitt's been with me since day one here, but I understand is what I understand. These guys want opportunity, and that's what happens when you develop a room and you get it to a point where a guy like Anthony Pittman is like, hey, you know what? For me to get through Jalen Reeves-Maven, Jack Campbell, Malcolm Rodriguez, Alex, let me go take my shot over here. It's just a credit to his teammates and the lay of the land, the healthy competition. Like, I'll never forget this after the year. We know that Derek Barnes went down in the San Fran game. Malcolm goes in and he plays lights out. And after a year, I called him in one by one. I was talking to Malcolm, because you go from being a rookie sensation to a true backup. And I asked him how that affected him. And he was like, I just always rooted for my teammates. And when you talk culture, that's the culture you want. And that's true, healthy. Do you think Malcolm want to start?
Absolutely.
Do you think Malcolm's going to be scratching and clawing? Absolutely.
How much better is that going to make Derek and everybody else ahead of him too?
And that is the ripple effect, and that's culture to me. Is when everybody's elevating their game, not out of envy, but out of I want to see you do good, but I want to do better. Like that to me is when you see players elevate, and I've been very fortunate and blessed to coach the players I have.
Now, you talk about the players, but you deserve a lot of credit for the culture that's built in that room and how much better those linebackers have been over the last few years. You've got a really good room there. It's an exciting time. It's draft week. You have such a unique perspective having been through it. Yeah. I'm sure you get flashbacks probably sometimes this week of that. And
I try not to remind myself how long ago that was, but yeah, I do, man. It's like surreal sometimes sitting back and still some of my teammates still playing here. Jalen Reeves-Maybin, and Germ thinks he's part-time player, part-time GM. So he's been upstairs. He walked through the cafeteria because he's been rehabbing. He's like, hey, have we seen any linebackers replace Pitt and Nowalski? I said, don't worry about it. I'll bring competition for you soon. Don't you worry. But no, dude, I'm very fortunate and blessed to be a part of this process on both sides. And now to see it, like I said, the biggest thing I try to tell these draftees, these potential draft eligible players is to relax, enjoy the moment, and do not let your story end on draft day. It's just beginning.
Yeah, it's a fun time because, you know, by this time in a couple of weeks, you're going to be a much better football team. That's got to be exciting for a coach like you.
Can't wait. As long as Brad give me a couple more linebackers.
Appreciate you, Shep, as always. Thanks for taking the time.
All right, I appreciate you, Tim.
Welcome back to the 20 in the Huddle podcast. I'm very happy to welcome in Alex Maloney, who is the coordinating producer of the NFL draft coverage for the NFL Network. That's a full year job, Alex, but you also do some of the international games, some of the exclusive games for the NFL Network, so you are a busy man, but it is draft time, and so now that is obviously the focus. Alex, when does this process start for you in terms of coordinating and getting everything ready for the draft? Is it literally when the previous draft ends?
You know, on the plane back from Kansas City last year, you instantly think, how did this draft go? What can we do different? What can we do better in Detroit next year? And then I think I took my first official draft trip to Detroit late May, early June. So once you're there, once you see the site, once you kind of picture where all the pieces can go, you really take off at that point. So it's a 10-month process to get us from, you know, point A to point Z, so to speak.
Well, you teased it. What was that official visit like? What do you like of the setup in Detroit? Obviously, the first time the city is hosting the NFL draft, there's a lot of excitement here for it. It's going to be a crowded and ruckus atmosphere. What were the first impressions landing in Detroit and seeing this thing start to unfold?
Well, I think first and foremost, everyone was ready for it 10, 11 months out. Like, oh, why are you here? Oh, we're here for the draft coming next year. Oh, we know all about it. Like, we're ready for it. So the fact that people were already talking about it made it kind of feel like, okay, this is going to be a special draft. This isn't just going to be the draft is here for a week and you pick up and you go. And then, you know, one thing that has made these drafts so special is it's kind of mood from city to city, I really think, is the people, right? It's going to be seeing all the Honolulu Blue kind of take over downtown around the theater. And I think the site for this year's draft and kind of the avenues and the way people can kind of be there to see it is going to be really special, unlike many other cities that we've kind of had.
You know, this event is unique, and probably for somebody from your perspective is just the unpredictability of it, right? Of being outside. We saw in Nashville a couple of years ago with the weather and the rain and everything else. Do you like that part of it? Does that part of it make you a little nervous, unsettling? Or, you know, how do you approach kind of just the unpredictability of a different city every year, outside elements, and who knows what's going to happen?
It's funny that you say that, because literally, like, right before we started talking, my like weather app started to give me what next Thursday is going to look like. So like right before we started talking, I like looked, okay, it's partly sunny, partly cloudy, and it'll be a high of 70. So it's like, great. All these like weather contingency meetings that we've had, like maybe they don't matter.
You become part meteorologist here for the couple of weeks leading
in. Oh, yeah, all the time. Like Doppler is like a favorite on my computer, like checking it all the time. What's the wind speed? Like, you know, if the wind is this much, we have to move off our set, all that sort of stuff, which I don't want to have to think about, but is part of the job. You know, it's the price of doing business, right? you know, yeah. all of that time that we spend to worry about weather contingencies, it's worth it because we want to have the special outdoor event. And thankfully, we haven't had anything that has, you know, knocked us around too much. So if that's the price we have to pay to be able to put on the best event we can, it's worth it. It's fine.
It's funny just what this event has become, and obviously you're a big part of that, bringing it into everybody's living room. But when you look at the old days, and they're all in a hotel room, and the old school phones, and just how this has evolved over the years, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, this has become a really one of the biggest events in the football calendar. I look at it right there with the Super Bowl, just in terms of the resources put to it and the time spent. And just everything that goes along with it.
It's a traveling circus, and I mean that in every positive way possible. And I think what's special about it is, you know, as you go from city to city, every NFL city is a little bit different. Yeah. So that makes every draft a little bit different, which is great. So, you know, New York was awesome. I did a couple drafts there. It was really fun, you know, Jets and Giants fans doing their thing. But to a certain extent, it was the same thing every year. This is different. Again, like I said, every city provides something unique to us. So being able to incorporate that into the show, the spectacle, because that's really what it is, you know, makes this event one of my favorite ones of the year.
So can you tease anything special for Lions fans here? What kind of maybe Detroit-related stuff are you going to get into?
Trouble,
are you
going
to
huh?
highlight? Or do we have to wait and see? Or is there any tease allowed?
Look, all I will say is that the surprises for this year's draft, I think, are better than any draft we've had before. And if I say any more, I'm going to get in trouble. So I'll leave it at that.
You know, I did see something interesting. The cross promotion that I saw you guys release, I think it was last week, where some ESPN guys are going to come over to the NFL Network. The NFL Network guys are going to go over to ESPN. I think that's a really unique idea. I think it's really cool, personally, from kind of just being in the business, a former newspaper guy, that kind of cross promotion. What was the reason that came about? And are you excited about that part? Maybe getting some a little fresh talent, a little new perspective into each network?
Yeah, we call it the crossover. You know, for all these draft calls and site surveys like I talked about, which we've had for months, we're really working in partnership with ABC and ESPN, right? We're not as big of rivals as you think we are. We have to work together in order for this event to go the way we want it to go. If we are butting heads on stage, literally with cameras or anything else, this event doesn't go. We share assets, we share ideas, all that sort of stuff. So this was just kind of a logical transition for us. Like, it makes our shoulder programming better if they have some fresh voices on our air and vice versa. So the collaboration has been one of the best parts of this experience. It would be a lot harder if they were trying to backstab us and we were fighting with them or whatever, but instead we kind of really work as three networks together, and it's a rewarding part of what we do.
So are you in Detroit currently, or when do you get to Detroit? When does it become real for you? Like, okay, this is it. This is happening. It's coming.
I am wheels up on Sunday.
Sunday.
So wheels up on Sunday. I'll be at the theater come Monday. And that's when it'll hit me, because I've looked at this space where the theoretical theater is going to be built. Like, we've kind of stood in the distance, and there's basically been like this elevated cone, which has been showing us in the distance, here's where this theater will be. And it'll be great to have that cone go away, that orange cone, and have the theater be there instead. Like, okay, this is where the prospects walk. This is where the commissioner announces their names. Like, that's when it will finally hit me. And then, you know, it feels like a Super Bowl in the sense where every day as you get closer, more and more people are there. The energy starts to build. So, you know, waking up Thursday morning feels like it has like a Super Bowl Sunday type of vibe to it.
Well, hopefully it'll have a Super Bowl vibe, just in the sense that obviously there's a lot of excitement surrounding the Lions. I know fans are going to have to wait a little bit for that selection now. 29, they've been used to picking a lot earlier than that, but the success of last year obviously is going to be a lot later. So there could be some Detroit fans that have a few pops late into the night staying up there. You wheels up on Sunday. What's the first thing you do when you get in Detroit? What's priority number one?
Well, I'm going to eat. First and foremost, I've been there enough. I've scheduled my flight in a way where I can like get to Detroit in time. I know there are a few restaurants I like, so I'll hit some of the favorites. And then Monday, it's going to be taking in the site, right? It's walking the whole thing, knowing where everything is. I'm one of the first people from our production team to get there. So as people start to trickle in, quite frankly, I have to have answers for a lot of people. So it's making sure I can provide those answers and having the right lay of the land as best I could, and then figuring out how the site, you know, interacts with what we want the production to be.
You guys do such a great job, you know, bringing the draft in into the living room. I love the coverage. You guys have done great in all these cities. I love it being in a different spot every year. I think that was a great idea by the NFL. Good luck. I think it's going to be an exciting week in Detroit. There's going to be a lot of fans down there. It should be a great atmosphere. Let's hope the weather stays good.
My Apple weather says we're going to be fine here. I'm not concerned about it. We're good.
I know you're on top of that. Alex Maloney does such a great job, the coordinating producer of the NFL draft coverage, bringing this thing into our living room every single year. Great job. Have so much fun in Detroit. I think it's going to be a great environment. I know you guys are going to put on quite the show. Thanks for joining me, Alex. I appreciate it.
Happy to talk with you.
Welcome back to the 20 in the Huddle podcast, and I am very excited to welcome in Daniel Jeremiah, NFL media analyst for the NFL Network. He is one of my go-to guys in the pre-draft process. Daniel, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you are a very, very busy man these days.
Oh, it's great to see you, man. I cannot wait to get out to Detroit, get this thing fired up, and let's get it going.
Well, I know you've got some commitments lined up here, so let's get right into it. A little bit different of a draft for Detroit and Brad Holmes. You know, the last three cycles, he's had a top 10 pick. The last 2 years, he's had two picks in the first round. Now, because of the success of last year, you got to go all the way down to 29. I know Detroit fans are in for a long
night.
They're
okay with that. I think they're okay with that trade, right?
Yeah. I'm just curious, when you look at this draft class as a whole, where do you see the biggest strengths? Where could maybe, you know, best available lineup for the Lions at the end down at 29?
Well, it's a great question. To me, it's an offensive draft. So we've got a bunch of quarterbacks. When you're talking about potentially six going, now I don't know that we'll get to six, but, you know, even five is a huge number. So you start with those, you know, the top end quarterbacks. That's a story. You look at the receivers and the tackles are very loaded positions, stacked positions. I think those three positions are going to make up a big chunk of the first round. So, and how that impacts the teams at the bottom of round one, it's like, well, okay, we could look at it as maybe we could get one, you know, a guy at the you know, tackle position if we wanted one. That would be, you know, would have been a, you know, top 15 pick in other years. It just so happens there's so many guys this year that it pushes one of those down. Or you look at it and say, well, you know what, we could actually get to the near the front of the line of some of these other positions that teams have avoided because they've really honed in on those other spots. So I look at it in terms of what they need and what's going to be there and how the draft falls. And I think, you know, to me, corner is one that I'd be, you know, keeping a close eye on.
You know, to that point, because of all the quarterbacks, the offensive draft, like you said, those teams that maybe are looking to improve on defense that are in the second half of the draft, toward the end of the draft, they're probably going to see some really good defensive players that normally wouldn't be there be pushed back that way, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, and I think, look, it's not the best defensive draft we've seen. You know, it's not super deep at some of these positions. But I do think there is some talent there, especially towards the top. And I think those guys, because we have so many teams in two camps, they are going to get their young quarterback in this draft, or they're trying to help the young quarterback they already have in this draft. And yeah, the Detroit Lions, obviously now with Jared established and all the investments they've made on that side of the ball, they're in a different camp completely. So they can look at some, you know, targeted needs defensively and what they want to get accomplished there. And I think you're looking at, you know, a chance to get the fourth corner, you know, the fourth, fifth corner in this draft class, which is still a really, really good player. And I think there is a drop off after that top handful of corners than when you get into that next wave. So that's one of the examples of how it could kind of fall to him. Even like defensive tackle, you know, it's a, in this draft class, it, you've got Byron Murphy, who's probably going to go up there somewhere in the top 15 when it's all said and done. But there's, you know, two, three other really intriguing guys. Johnny Newton would be in, amongst that group as somebody that, hey, you know, we've got other areas we can look to address, but this is a premier position and one of these guys kind of falls to us. You know, hey, we'll go ahead and take them.
You know, one of the things that's been a core here in Detroit with Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell is the offensive line. And keeping that a strength is something that Brad talked about in his pre-draft press conference. I'm just curious, when you're looking at the end of the first round, who are maybe a couple of those tackles, Taylor Decker's in the final year of his contract, or maybe some of those interior guys? Because usually, as you know, Deej, we see those interior guys start to go in the 20s. That's about where they're at. Maybe a couple tackles, a couple interior guys that if Detroit wants to continue having that offensive line of strength and add depth there, who are maybe a few guys that you like right there in the 20s?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance that one of the Guyton Mims get there, right? Mm. So you've got Guyton at Oklahoma and you've got Mims at Georgia. Neither guy's played a ton of football. They're both physical freaks. And I mean, they're like legitimately physical freaks. So they're a little bit of a project. You know, there's some work to be done there. It could time up well. You talk about Decker, you get through, you know, gives these guys time. They don't have to throw them right out there. But you've got tremendous upside and could, you know, could bookend with Panay for a long time. So those two guys, I don't think they're both there. You know, it might not either be there, but I think there's outside hope that one of those guys is there. After that, to me, there's a drop off at the position. I don't know that I have one that's worthy of taking there. Jordan Morgan's one that some people like that I'm not as high on him. So that would be a little bit rich for me in that department. When you look at the interior guys, look, it's the centers, you know, that have some versatility. You know, Powers Johnson out of Oregon is almost 330 pounds. I think he can play any of those three interior spots. He can move people. Not quite as athletic as maybe you'd want there, but he's a good player. Graham Barton's gone. He'll be picked by then from Duke. So then you're looking at Zach Frazier, who, if you were asking me, we might even have had this conversation previously, but the who's the Detroit Lion type player? I would Frazier, like Zach Frazier would be he'd be the pick there, a four-time wrestling champ. Like, absolutely, you know, that refuses to come off the field, you know, when he's hurt.
Yeah,
like that's a lion.
That sounds like a Dan Campbell type of guy right there.
100%.
Look, Brad has shown a willingness to move up in the draft. I think he's moved up four times in his previous three drafts. If he decides there's a guy there, who, Daniel, might that be, if it's either a guy or a position wise that would maybe tempt Brad to move up from 29 if he so chooses?
I think if one of you look at that top corner group, and for me it would be, you know, Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell. If one of those guys started to drift a little bit, I kind of identify the Jaguars as kind of an obvious corner team, and they're picking 17. So, you know, that I think that's Seattle, right? That's picking right ahead of them at 16. You know, that could be a that could be a trade partner if they thought, man, we can get up here and get one of these top two corners, you know, for a team that has a need there, and those are ready-made guys. I think that would be kind of something that would be at least worth kicking around the draft room a little bit and having that discussion.
How do you think the new kickoff rules affect the draft at all? I know you talked about this on your national conference call this week, and I thought you made some really interesting points. I actually asked Brad Holmes about it too, and he said they're still kind of going through it, not just from the return aspect, but what kind of body types are now going to be in the cover areas, in the return areas. And, you know, they have confidence they'll figure it out, but it's still something they're kind of working through. I'm just curious, from your perspective, how do you think maybe that the new rules change how teams evaluate it, maybe some players that are taken that potentially wouldn't be in other years?
Yeah, I know. I think it does matter. And I think there's the unknown this year, which I think will help some people, because maybe there's even a chance that teams are overvaluing what, you know, impact this will make. But I know teams are looking for every edge they can get, and they've identified this as an area where they think they can kind of cut the line here and really find value. So I think in terms of the body types, like, you're going to see bigger guys out there. It's more of an offensive play now, almost, than a coverage play. So to me, I think it helps more of the linebacker tight end group maybe than the corner receiver group in terms of coverage value, like how you cover kicks and how you can block and do those things. Whereas I think the returner, there's a little more value in some being a little bit more sturdy, like a running back. Can you break it? Do you have vision? Can you break a tackle? And then can you go from there? So, like Cooper DeJean's names come up when I'm talking to teams the last couple of days. And that's one of the things that they literally have, it's close with him and another player, and they've bumped him up because they feel like he could win us a game. We put him back there as a returner. You have one, you return a kick for a touchdown, your odds of winning that game are freaking sky high. So, having a guy like that, it breaks ties.
A couple quick ones for you here. This is the best roster the Lions have had heading into the draft in Brad Holmes' tenure. You look at it, you mentioned cornerback. Obviously could use some depth there. But when you go into a draft like that, can you just really trust your board at that point? And is that really the best strategy when it's all said and done, Daniel? It's just trusting your board, picking guys, don't take a lesser player to maybe fill a need, and just get good football players. And you think Detroit can head into this draft doing that because of where this roster is at and what Brad and Dan have done the last 3 years?
Yeah, some ways it's like, it's not a detriment. It's almost a benefit to be picking down here for a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. Number one, you don't force anything. You just kind of, it falls to you. And then you have a roster without that, we can't line up and play tomorrow need. So you can afford to just take what falls. You don't have to be locked in on one position or the other. The other part of it is it doesn't cost as much. So you're getting the same 5 years of control for less money, and you're letting the draft come to you and take the best available player. So you're getting value in the player you get because you don't have a glaring need, and you're getting literally financial value, not having to pay the guy as much money. So there are benefits, obviously, to winning, and this is one that's not often discussed, but I think, you're getting a cheaper player, and you're not having to force it.
How much are you looking forward to getting to Detroit and just the setup in Detroit, first-time city hosting it? You looking forward to it? Wheels up Sunday, I hear?
I cannot wait. Yeah, I will be out there Sunday. In one of those deals, this will tell you my level of excitement. Monday is when my week kicks off with all the responsibilities that I have with NFL Network. So you need to book your flight you need to book your flight Sunday for a Monday start of the week. My flight on Sunday morning is at 6 a.m. out of San Diego. So I am itching to get out there and looking forward to a great week.
Well, it's going to be a great week in Detroit. We will be following you in the weeks of, and obviously the weekend, one of the best in the business. Daniel Jeremiah, thank you so much for joining the Twin Model Podcast. I appreciate you as always.
You're the best. I need you to text me a recommendation. Give me a meal recommendation, because I don't trust Rap Sheet. Like Rappaport, I don't trust his taste. So I need
No. I got you. Okay. Text coming your way.
Okay, you're the best. Thanks, brother.
All right, Daniel. Appreciate you.
See you, man.